first talk of the meditation retreat, and first talk will be on some more instructions on meditation. The aim of the meditation retreat that I give is in order for people to gain some taste of very still states of mind, states of mind which are very enjoyable, very peaceful, and also very powerful. And in order to gain those peaceful and beautiful states of mind, there are some basic instructions to be given. Again, the instructions which I give now will be the main instructions, and later on during the retreat I'll give some supplementary instructions which can give support this practice of meditation. The development or cultivation of the mind, which I'm teaching here, the Chitta Bhavana, is developing the mind in renunciation, in letting go, and thereby appreciating the results of letting go. It's going against attachment, going towards freedom. And it's the Pali words which the Buddha gave for these states of mind, he called liberation of the mind. So this is the aim of this retreat, is to liberate the mind. Even though it's only a temporary liberation, even so it's very useful to be able to appreciate or experience what a liberated mind is like, and to understand thereby, you know, what a prison we usually live in our mind and in our body. So this is actually learning from experience. And again, the most powerful insights come not just through inference or through thinking and working things out, but actually experiencing the reality of these states and understanding what they really mean. And so what we're doing is developing the mind in states of letting go. This is practical letting go. And to do so, we have many stages of letting go. And very often, to achieve those stages of letting go, instead of paying attention to what we're letting go of, which is a huge area, we pay attention to what's remaining in our mind. And the development of letting go is usually explained by the Buddha in terms of what remains, what is left of the body, of the mind, of experience. And what's remaining in the mind is the meditation object. And thus in the development of the mind we have different meditation objects as we go deeper and deeper into states of letting go and states of stillness. And that's why that when the Buddha taught the meditation on the breath, the Anapanasati Sutta, he taught many, as it were, even in the Anapanasati Sutta, there's different meditation objects which one puts attention on throughout the development of the breath meditation. All those meditation objects are linked to the breath, but they are a little bit different as one goes deeper and deeper and deeper into the still, peaceful states of the mind. And the longer I'm a bhikkhu, the longer I'm a monk, the more I am amazed at the power of the Buddha's teachings, and how that one wastes time in this practice by not fully recognizing the power of these teachings, following them perfectly. And in the Anapanasati Sutta, it was the Buddha's teachings on how to meditate using the breath. He said that one should meditate on the breath in a certain way. And if one meditates on the breath in that way, it leads to these beautiful states of mind. And so that in the Anapanasati Sutta, the Buddha's teaching on the meditation on the breath, he taught different stages. And those stages are different objects of meditation. When one gets one object of meditation clearly in one's mind, then one can proceed to the next object of meditation. The first object of meditation in the Anapanasati Sutta, the meditation on the breath, the mindfulness along with the breath, is the awareness just of breath going in or going out, together with the knowledge whether it's a long breath or a short breath. And this is the first object of the meditation. It's a feeling which tells you whether the breath is going in or going out. And it's important to know that this is not nose meditation, it's not belly meditation, it's not throat meditation, it's breath meditation. So the attention should not be put on a part of the body. That's not the meditation object. The meditation object is the breath itself. And understanding that, you should understand also, it doesn't matter where you perceive the breath. It can be anywhere in the body. The important point is that one is perceiving the breath going in. One is perceiving the breath going out. And the important point of this limiting exercise is to have that continual awareness of the breath. The breath goes in, you know. If the breath goes out, you know. The breath goes in, you know. The breath goes out, you know. Maybe 100, 200, 300, 500 breaths, one after the other, without missing any breath. This particular object of meditation can still be quite diverse. It can still allow for many other sounds, feelings, thoughts to be alongside that meditation object, which is now the in-breath and the out-breath. However, at least for this point, the mind is has let go of enough of the past and the future, enough of thoughts and fantasies, at least to be able to know the breath for one or two moments during its in movement, at least in one or two moments in its out movement. So the mind cannot go off too far. It's as if that the attention, the mindfulness, has to be home to catch the in-breath, and it can quickly nip outside to do whatever it wants, but it has to be back in time the out-breath. And it can go and do something else, and then it has to be back in time for the next in-breath. So, using that simile, you can see that the attention cannot go too far. It has to stay close to home. This is what I call the first stage of meditation on the breath. The sustained awareness on the breath. Enough to know in-breath, out-breath. Sometimes the meditators have trouble getting this degree of attention. And if you do, there is a method which you can use, which is hard work but very effective, and that is to count the breath. And the most efficient way I've found of counting the breath is as you breathe in, you count one, you breathe out, count one. Just silently to yourself. Breathing in, two, breathing out, two. Breathing in, three, breathing out, two. Breathing in, four, breathing out, two. Breathing in, five, breathing out, two. In, six, out, two. In, seven, out, two. Breathing in, eight, breathing out, eight. You have to develop patience for this. Breathing in, nine, breathing out, nine. Having reached nine, then you start to get at one. Breathing in one, breathing out one. Breathing in two, breathing out two. Three, three, four, four, five, five. Breathing in six, breathing out six. Breathing in seven, breathing out seven. Breathing in eight, breathing out eight. Up to eight. Starting again at one. Breathing in one, breathing out one. In two, out two. Three, three, four, four, five, five, six, six. Breathing in seven, breathing out seven. Just up to seven this time. Next five from one to six, and one to five. Then breathing in one, breathing out one, into, out. Breathing in three, breathing out three. Breathing in four, breathing out four. Then breathing in one, breathing out one, breathing in two, breathing out two. Breathing in three, breathing out two, just to three. And breathing in one, breathing out one, breathing in two, breathing out two. And then last of all, breathing in one, breathing out one. Lessening the numbers by one every time. Until you can complete the whole cycle. It's 45 breaths long. And if you can complete that whole cycle, it means your mindfulness, your attention, has been able to watch every breath, at least part of every breath, for 45 successive breaths, without the mind wandering off. Because if you wander off, then you don't know, you cannot remember where you were in the cycle. Sometimes if I'm tired, and I do this, breathing in one, breathing out one, breathing in two, breathing out two. And then suddenly my mind just comes back and I'm breathing in 16 and breathing out 16, breathing in 17. My mindfulness hasn't been strong enough. It shows you whether you truly are paying attention to what you're doing or not. Sometimes but it happens breathing in one, breathing out one, breathing in two, breathing out three. If you're very dull, then you can only get to three. And then again you wander off into the dream or fantasy. Which again shows you that you're not even got to the first stage of the meditation. However, if you ever lose your place in this counting scheme, then you have to go right back to the very beginning again. Breathing in one, breathing out one, breathing in two, breathing out one. Sometimes the frustration that you bring will generate energy. If I'm really going to do it this time, I'm going to complete one whole cycle. I'm going to complete three cycles, one after the other. It's hard work. And sometimes people fail to realize that meditation is not just out and out relaxation. But it does take some work to get to these beautiful states. But the work is well worth it. You can develop that degree of mindfulness. And that degree of attention onto your breath, you find that you're getting somewhere. So this becomes the first stage of the meditation. If you can complete three cycles, that's 135 breaths. You've noted each one, in breath, out breath, 135 breaths in a row. If you can do that, you can say you've got the first stage in this Anapanasati meditation on the breath. You've let go of much in the world to be able to remain sustained on the breath. If you don't like to do the counting, then as long as you can do roughly the same number of breaths, in, out, 135, 200 breaths. I don't know how long that is, 4 or 5 minutes or something, but not missing any breath. Then you're beginning to do the breath meditation according to the Buddhist teaching. The next stage which you should aim for after you have this stage fairly well accomplished is the full continuous awareness on the breath. And that is much more than just knowing in-breath, out-breath. In breath, out breath, for such a long period of time. The second stage is where you have continuous full awareness of the breath. So from the very beginning of an in breath, you are mindful. You know the breath is going in. And right throughout the in breath, your mindfulness knows every moment of that breath. Without the mindfulness switching to any other object. Whole in-breath, you watch from the beginning to the end with no gaps. The next out-breath, you watch from beginning to end without any gaps. The next in-breath, you watch from the very beginning to the end without any gaps. breath after breath after breath after breath, 100 breaths, 200 breaths, for many minutes, not just for a few seconds, 5-10 minutes, you have full awareness on the breath continuously. There may be other perceptions in the mind at the same time, but they are on the outside. They are not the center of your attention. Just in the same way, you can be listening to what I'm saying now, and in the background there may be the sound of the car. You're paying attention to these words I'm speaking, and not to the sound of the car. In the same way, when you're doing this second stage of the meditation, your full attention is on the breath as it's happening now, fully aware as the movement of the breath goes from the beginning to the end of each in-breath, from the beginning to the end of each out-breath. This is called like fully knowing the breath. And this is such an important stage in the meditation to get this far. If you want to develop any insight or understanding, this is a prerequisite to get to this sort of stage in meditation. So you can sustain your attention unbroken, full, on your chosen object for long periods of time. So this should be our aim, to get to the second stage of meditation. Full, continual awareness on your meditation object, on the breath. Later on, if you wish to try other meditation objects, one still has to maintain that same level of full continual attention on these things for them to be really effective in giving you the fruits of the meditation object. You have to get to the stage of full continual awareness on these things. Now, the getting to full continual awareness on the breath or on any other meditation object will begin by just willpower. You make a resolution to do this. You want to do this. You strive, you aim, you set this as your goal. And it's okay to set yourself goals in this meditation. But make sure these goals are reasonable goals. And be patient with achieving your goal. And don't give way to frustration because of your impatience. Set a goal, and if you do the right thing, then the goal has to be achieved eventually. This is a natural process. However, there are so many tricks and skillful means, which I'd like to now talk about, which help to gain these stages of meditation. And perhaps the most powerful of these skillful means is realizing that you cannot sustain your willpower too long. Because if you just work with willpower, this is what I want to achieve, this is what I want to get in this meditation, after a while you become tired. One has to realize that the mind doesn't always follow your will. It often does what it wants to do. It does what it finds happiness in. Like any other being in this world, look upon your mind, it's not yours, there's another being in this universe. And if you can, as it were, bribe that being, then you can get it to do all sorts of things. And the bribery is like the happiness of the mind. If one can develop the happiness, the experience of happiness with the breathing, with the breath, then you find the meditation is far, far easier. Developing the happiness with the breath can be done in a number of ways. One way is to, when you're breathing in and breathing out, alongside that meditation on the breath, to also develop the perception of what the Buddha called renunciation, of being apart from things. Because here in this meditation retreat, you've given up so much business, so much work, so many duties. For me, it's like a very busy senior monks at the monastery in Serpentine. I'm giving up all the building, all the administration, all of the solving problems, all of the writing letters, all of the doing articles, all of the answering the phone, all of the talking to my fellow monks. I'm giving up a load of things, which is bliss. I'm giving up all of my duties and responsibilities. All I've got to do now is just give a talk every twice a day, and that's all. Maybe a few interviews now and again. So when I remember that, it brings up bliss. So I realize just what a wonderful opportunity this is, just to be able to meditate on the breath and nothing else. It makes the breath attractive. It makes the breath beautiful. Because when I'm watching the breath, I'm also remembering this pronunciation. I'm already free of so much. And that brings a sense of wanting to watch the breath, inclining to the peacefulness of the mind. So this is the first thing which may help you gain the second state of the meditation. Just this appreciation of the ease and the tranquility of a meditation retreat. The second thing which might help you gain the full attention on the breath is by developing an attitude of loving kindness towards the breath. This is another very powerful way of gaining full attention. Your breath, as it goes in and goes out, develop the perception that your breath, again, like a being in this universe, has served you since you were born. It's taken air into your lungs with the oxygen and energy. It's taken all the waste products out. And so one can develop a sense of gratitude towards your breath, not just taking it for granted, but having a sense of concern and care and thankfulness towards the breath which is sustaining your life. This is a perception which you can develop if you want to. And if you can develop the feeling of the breath being a being in this world and caring for that being, just like a mother loves her only child, is how the Buddha's description of loving kindness of metta. Like a mother loves her only child. If you could look at your breath with that same attitude, with that same perception, like a mother loves her child, so I hold the breath. A mother would never let a baby down, would never drop it while it was holding it. The mother's attention would never go elsewhere, even though the mother's busy. You'd always have a lot of her attention just to know where the baby was. The same way that if one can develop that same attitude towards the breath, the care, the kindness, the love towards the breath, then you find the breath again is very easy to watch and to follow. You don't need so much willpower for developing metta towards the breath. Not only do you develop metta power towards the breath, if you watch the breath with this sort of attitude, you also find that watching the breath becomes very enjoyable. The attitude of loving kindness, the attitude of love, is a very pleasant way of looking at the world. And then you will find that you will look upon the breath and you will see a lot of pleasure, delight in the breath. It brings us onto that the third skillful means of being able to sustain attention on the breath, and that is by developing the experience or the perception of the beautiful breath. There was one monk from Thailand who's been here many times, Ajahn Gunha, and his teaching on meditation is very simple. He says again and again and again, when you breathe, when you do meditation on the breath, breathe in. Got this Thai word, sabha. And actually, he says it, breathe in, sabha. Breathe out, sabha. Developing the beautiful breath. If you breathe in, just enjoy it as you would a delicious meal in a five-star restaurant. savor one breath, to get as much pleasure out of one breath as you possibly can. And breathe in just for pleasure. Breathe out for pleasure. Because what you're doing then, you're making the breath so delicious. It's so easy to watch. The mind doesn't go anywhere else because the breath is so enjoyable, so lovely, so wonderful. So you can try something like this. You start your meditation, just breathe in with pleasure. Breathe in a beautiful breath. You breathe out a beautiful breath. Just feel the pleasure and the joy and the happiness. Just a breath. Because when the mind sees pleasure in its object, sees delight in its object, the mind will stay there without any effort, without any force being needed. The mind will like to be with what it enjoys. And instead of just doing the breath meditation, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out, same old breath, if you develop the perception of the beautiful breath, the breath meditation becomes very easy and delightful, and you can do it as much as you want, and it's fine. But once you start developing the experience of the beautiful breath, the second stage of the meditation of full attention, continuous attention on the breath, is just so easy. Because you're paying full attention to what you're enjoying. The way of the mind is that we can choose to perceive an object in any way we like. The Buddha once said that the way of meditation is really the way of training perception. And in one sutra, the Buddha said that he developed perception to such a point that when it was daytime, he could perceive it as night. When it was night time, he could perceive it as day. You can do that with perception. You can look at something which is white and perceive it as black. Because perception is just so much of what we perceive, is what we add on to the world, what we add on to reality. I've often in Dhammaloka Center and in a monastery compared life to the pages of a children's colouring book. Just black lines on a white sheet of paper. That's reality. And then, as it were, our mind colours it in with crayons. And when it comes to our mind's attention, it's already been coloured in. That's called perception. How we perceive the world, mind's already coloured it all in. And if we're in a beautiful mood, we can colour it in with yellows and bright reds. Beautiful, profound blue. If we're really depressed, we can put grey, and dark grey, and darker grey, and black. And that's how we can colour in the pages of our life. And it's really up to you which colours you choose. Life only gives you the paper and the black line. And what you do with those is a job of perception. So it can be quite easy to develop the perception on the breath as a very beautiful breath. And it can also be towards the afternoon period, the end of the retreat. It can also, if you're not careful, develop the perception of breath going out. What am I doing this for? This is awful. Why don't I get somewhere else? This is like developing the opposite perception, and that makes meditation hard. So developing the beautiful breath, deliberately looking for pleasure in the breath, breathing in sabbath, breathing out just sabbath, is a way of developing success in meditation. So you can try it when you meditate. You breathe in the most delectable, delicious, sensuous breath you can ever imagine. You find your attention stays. And when you get to the second stage of the meditation, which is so important, so vital to any benefit in meditation, the full continuous awareness in the breath, then I would encourage everyone to take that meditation further into deep bliss state. What you have to do then is to third stage in the Anapanasati Sutta, corresponds to stage number four in the way the Buddha taught it, is like to calm down that object, which is your breath. You have full attention, full awareness on it, a meaningful awareness, continuous, not missing a moment. Then the next stage is just to calm the whole thing down. You do that calming down either just by a very gentle letting go, very gentle, as it were, lifting your foot off the accelerator, not doing anything. Here you have to really develop the sense of the passive observer rather than the driver of the vehicle. Because many people are habitual drivers, doers, always taking control, always calling the shot. In this stage of the meditation, you have to stop doing. You have to be passive, be observant, without doing anything. It's similar to, there was a fellow who comes to our monastery, he's an aircraft engineer. He was saying that the aircraft were becoming so automatic these days, that he said in a few years that there'll only be two beings in the cockpit, the captain and the dog. That's all they'll need. He said the captain will be in the cockpit there to feed the dog. That's what the captain's job, to feed the dog. And the dog's purpose is to bite the captain if he touches anything. That's all they will need. The captain to feed the dog and the dog to bite the captain if he touches anything. It'll be so automatic. And this is, it would be wonderful if we could have this dog in our meditation at this stage. So it advises if you touch anything, don't touch anything. Let it alone. It's just the automatic part of the meditation. You just need to let go of the control. And from the second stage of the meditation, you will find the breath becoming more and more and more refined. And you have to be careful here to continue with the full attention on the breath. And sometimes at this stage people lose the breath. The mindfulness isn't strong enough yet. If you find that the mindfulness isn't strong enough and the breath starts to disappear, you have to, as it were, like hold the course of breath and don't let it get too refined. That's why it is much better to, on the second stage of the meditation, to make sure that you can keep tension on the breath for a good 5 minutes. Full attention on the breath for 5 minutes before you allow that breath to get quieter and more peaceful. Do not rush the stages in this meditation technique. However, if you do start to aim for this third stage of the meditation, and you start to let go of the breath, or rather allow the breath to become more and more peaceful, more and more refined. Again, the mindfulness has to match the more refined object. Not only mindfulness, this is where some wisdom, some understanding into what's going on, into the nature of the mind, the nature of meditation, becomes very crucial. Because at this stage, the physical feeling of the breath will become so refined, so soft, so subtle, that the mental image of the breath will start to rise up. It's as if the breath is being registered on two screens, on the physical screen of physical consciousness and on the mental screen of mental consciousness. However, the physical screen is usually so strong and coarse that it's dominant. As that screen starts to get more and more refined, starts to settle down, the mental screen becomes more dominant, and the breath will start to appear instead of as a physical feeling, as what we call a samadhi nimitta, a sign of samadhi, a sign of concentration. And the fun part of this meditation is when you start to gain those samadhi nimitta, you start to mess around with them. So this is what takes you into the jhana, is samadhi nimitta. And it is a beautiful, blissful state of mind. It's a well worth enjoying, aiming for achieving. And the samadhi nimitta will appear to many people as some sort of light. However, as I mentioned many times, this is not a light because the eyes are not receiving anything. Eye consciousness is fully vanished. It's settled down, it's turned off. This actually is a mental image, something appearing to the mind consciousness. However, because the mind consciousness has not got a language of its own, so the only way we can interpret, we can colour in this particular page with the black lines on it, is to use the language from the other five senses. Because it's the mental image is beautiful, it's happy, it's bright, so we choose usually the visual language. It actually appears to our consciousness as if it were a light, bright and shining. Could be a star, could be a more diffuse, could be a Buddha statue, it could be anything. The thing is, it's none of these things. This is just how we perceive it. We've added these things to this mental image, this mental experience of the breath. It doesn't matter. The important thing is, if this mental image comes up, to pay attention to its beauty, to its vividness, to its shine, to its gloss. Because that is what we call the kitty sukha, the joy and the happiness, the sense of bliss, beauty, depth of peace in that image. Because after a while, the perception that this is a light, or this has some sort of shape or form, will disappear. That is not the aspect of the samadhi nimitta which you should pay too much attention to. Its size or its shape or its color or whatever. Instead, if one pays attention to its vividness, to its beauty, the happiness which is in that object, and after a while, that is what the mind will latch onto. That is what the mind will focus on. And after a while, that is all that will be left. It's the bliss. There's a beautiful simile which I use for the development of the mind in these states. And it's a simile of the Cheshire Cat from Lewis Carroll's book. And many of you know that simile. A Cheshire Cat appearing in the sky for Alice, and little by little the Cheshire Cat disappears. First of all, the tail disappears, then the legs disappear, then the whole body disappears. It fades away slowly, leaving just the head. Then the ears and the whiskers disappear. Then the whole head disappears, and it leaves just a smile without any mouth or lips to do the smiling. And that's the best simile I can give you for what I'm talking about here, the development of this bliss in meditation. Things disappear bit by bit in this meditation. You start in this first day, breathing in, breathing out, you're aware of so many other things. get full attention on the breath. Second stage is just aware of the breath, nothing else. The breath has still got many things in it. Then you develop the third stage, the mental image. The mental image may have shape, it may have colour, but then you allow even all of that to disappear, and all that's left is the smile, the bliss, the piti sukha, the joy and happiness in the mind, as a mental object. That's all. So you're letting go of everything in the world except this bliss. That's all you're remaining. That's why I call these stages in meditation stages of letting go. And when we say letting go, you're letting go of an enormous amount of the universe. In particular, you will notice if you go for these stages, you're letting go of the five external senses of the body. Physical touch, sound, sight, smell and taste are all disappearing. One of the last things to go will be physical touch. When you start to develop, usually at least by the second stage of the meditation, you should be completely unaware of the rest of your body. Don't feel any sensations in your legs, in your head, no itching, no aches, no pain, because the attention has been fully removed from the body. You're going towards the mind. So you're letting go of the five external senses. You're also letting go of your physical body. If you can do this the first few times, you'll just notice afterwards that how much time you spend with this body of yours. How much of like 1 hour? You spend about 59.99 minutes is concerned with something to do with your body. Sometimes it becomes a shock of how much the body weighs down the mind. Now you can leave it alone. Leave the body alone completely so you don't even feel it. When you don't feel the body, you don't have to move the body. If you don't move the body is still. It gets actually very healthy. Look after itself very, very well. You can only leave it alone. But the beauty of it is that you're free. Just like you come to this meditation retreat and you're free from your job. I'm free from my monastery. All the work it entails. You're free from your studies. You're free from your children and your husband, your wife and your relations and your house and all the work. You still have to deal with this body. You've let go of all that household stuff, work stuff, monastery stuff outside. Now I'm going to ask you to let go of your body as well. Go into the world of the mind. This is the pathway into that world. Developing this samadhi nimitta. As you develop this samadhi nimitta, focus the attention on the bliss. Don't do anything more. Don't shake up the mind. Because the more you act as a driver, the faster that samadhi nimitta will flee and disappear. It will go if you do something. You just say a word. And will disappear. Ajahn Chah gave this beautiful simile of the still forest pool. He used to, as a monk, a Tudong monk, going in the forest in the jungle. That one evening he was sitting by this pool in the forest, sitting very still, not doing anything. It was only because he was absolutely motionless. The animals will come out to drink. If he moves a muscle, if he even twitched, the animals would see, and they would not come out. Beautiful samadhi nimitta will come out. If you move, say anything, do anything, the Mardi Nimitz will run straight back into the jungle. It won't come out again for a long time. Like an animal. If you remain very still and composed, the Mardi Nimitz will come out. You can enjoy its company. That degree of stillness is what you need. Don't say anything. Don't do anything. So, you're not just letting go of the body, also letting go of your will. You're becoming a passenger rather than the driver. So this stage of meditation, letting go so much. The beautiful thing about these stages of meditation is that you experience directly. The more you let go, the more bliss it is. To understand that holding on to these things is called dukkha, suffering. You only know that once you've let go of that suffering. When it's something we've been holding on to throughout our lives, throughout many lives, we've never let these things go. We're so used to it. It's always been there. We don't know anything else. We cannot recognize it as suffering. It's only when we let these things go, when we separate ourselves from them, we realize just how much bliss it is when we let these things go. Can we really recognize these things as dukkha, as suffering? Like a person being born in prison, brought up in prison, spent their whole life in prison, knowing nothing else other than prison. They don't realize they're in prison. This is normal, this is natural. In fact, they often think everyone else is in prison as well. The first time that someone takes them by the hand and leads them to the world outside, they're shocked and bliss out that such a world can exist. Such a world of freedom can actually be there. This is what happens in meditation. You're leading the mind out of jail into the liberations of the mind. The Chaito Vimutti is the Buddha's word. The Vimoka, Vimutti and Vimoka are related words. This is especially the Vimoka, to the freedom. Many of you may know from the Sanskrit word moksha. Vimoksha means like the deep, profound liberation. Exactly the same word they use in Pali and Sanskrit for a prisoner who's been released from jail. They get freedom, liberation, moksha, or moksha. And this is what you're actually doing. You're liberating the body. And the mind, so liberating the mind. All of these things which I never realized are dukkha. So this is what one should aim for in this meditation. To get to the second stage of meditation. Full attention on the breath. That's the hard work to get that far. Afterwards, it's reasonably simple. This is like climbing up the hill. But to get to the top of the hill, the path between the mountains, and the rest is all downhill, easy and it's great fun. You go into the land of Samadhi. To get to the second stage of meditation, then develop the Samadhi Nimitta. Just allow that Samadhi Nimitta to attract the mind. Go to its bliss and abide in those bliss states. Eventually you'll be able to attain one of the jhanas, where the mind just has bliss as its constant object, moment after moment after moment. There's no other object being present in the mind, not being able to hear any sounds, not being able to feel the body, not being able to see, smell, or taste. Just the mental consciousness, the only one of the six consciousnesses left. with one steady, unmoving object, being bliss. You're blissing out. Not only is that great fun, the highest pleasure you'll experience as a human being, it beats sex, it beats drugs, it beats anything else which is available to any physical pleasure. It's just nothing compared to the bliss of meditation. But more than that, because it's a liberation of the mind, it's giving a direct teaching to you on attachment. What attachment to you? This is profound Dhamma. This is the Dhamma which I'm offering for you here in this retreat. I give many other talks in this retreat on the pathways into the jhanas and the skillful means in order to gain these states, and more on the samadhi nimitta, on perception and other things. So this should be enough for this morning's talk. Again, just to summarize, I've taught the stages of anapanasati, of mindfulness on the breath. First stage, continual awareness on the breath, in, out, the long periods of time. Second stage, full continuous awareness on the breath. So you know the breath from the beginning to its end, the beginning to its end. Help with such things as looking upon the breath with loving kindness, looking upon the breath with happiness, breathing in the Baha'i, breathing out the Baha'i. Until you get the samadhi nimitta, letting go of will, being a passenger on this journey. Once you get to the second stage, allowing the attention to switch to mental consciousness rather than physical consciousness, and being courageous enough to experience this. There's nothing wrong or dangerous with it. If fear ever comes up with something powerful and awesome in this meditation, always have faith and confidence that all those meditators, especially the great monks and the nuns, who develop these stages, become holy as a result. Nothing to fear. Everything to gain. So has anyone got any questions about the basic instructions of this meditation? It's not clear, or if there's any difficulty or problem that you think of, then please ask, if not for your own sake, but for the sake of others. I was going to actually, you're asking about how does the bliss which I've been describing work in with the four jhanas the Buddha taught. I was going to maybe talk later on another talk about the different stages of bliss for the four jhanas and exactly what to do as it were to gain those stages. But the point is that just to get to the first jhana, it will be the greatest bliss you've ever experienced. However, that later on you find out there's even more blissful states than the greatest bliss you've ever experienced. And you really start then to also understand the different meanings of bliss. And the first jhana becomes quite a core state of bliss once one has experienced the second jhana. And to gain that second jhana, again, you have to let go of something. And actually what you're letting go of, I'll go into more detail about this later, the big something. This is some last vestiges of will. It's you doing things. It's the letting go of something. However, it's more like the mind doing something. It's still, I like to put it, it's still wobbling. It's pretty still. There's a little wobble there. And once that wobble is fully let go of, you want to do the second jhana. That wobble is implies called upaka vichara. It's not thinking, it's subverbal, but it's still a movement of the mind. And there's a bliss of the second jhana. And there's a part of that bliss of the second jhana which is called impari piti, which is like an exciting aspect of bliss. And that is what is that go after going to the third jhana. Get into a, again, this is a very difficult state to describe, simply because they bear very little relation to our world outside. So much so that one is always struggling with language. The only time you really understand what these terms piti and sukha are, people use these words, so these are the words of like bliss and happiness. The only time you really understand what you desire is when you experience these things. And then you understand, oh, this is what they mean by sukha, the most refined part of happiness. And then one, actually it's not the most refined part of happiness, but then one lets go of that, then for fourth jhana, so that pure equanimity. And by saying pure equanimity, it's that pure equanimity which is the object of the mind. Instead of looking at things with equanimity, we're looking at equanimity. You're being equanimity. One object of mind which does not change for many hours. And again, in these states, there's no way. You cannot actually, you are aware, you cannot know. Not in the sense that we use that term usually. Because to know, we have to think, we have to perceive, we have to look at it this way and that way. And you say, what is this? Look at it this way and that way, before you can know what it is. And you've just got one aspect or one object there continuously. That which we call knowing really doesn't apply. You're perfectly aware. It's only afterwards you have this thing which the Buddha called reviewing knowledge. When you emerge from one of these states, I can't see how one can just stop or not look back and see what was this, look back and examine the experience you've been through. From that perspective, where you can look at it from a different angle, you can know what it was. Why, let's say, while you are in, say, a third jhana, you will not know whether you're in third jhana or what you're in while you're in there. But afterwards, you look back and say, that's third jhana. But I'll give a more of a talk on the jhana state one. Again, even though it may be more advanced than one's own experience, still it's interesting and useful to know in detail these things. Not just because one day one will achieve these things, but also because it gives an indication, gives more information, gives more instruction into where this meditation is leading. That's why the Buddha taught about jhana, to explain it in detail, even to people who have never achieved them before. His inspiration, his instruction, lets people know the journey. If you're going to go off to Europe, if you want to read the guidebook first of all, even though you haven't got there yet, so you know what to expect. Does that answer your question? Mm-hmm. Any other question anyone would like to ask?